You're listening to OCTalkRadio.net, Orange County's only community radio station.
You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Geveller.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. This is your host, Rick Franzi, and I'm excited to be here. My business partner, Doug Geveller, and I host this business talk show, which airs on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, live and exclusively at 4 p.m. on OCTalkRadio.net. And so if you're listening to us today live, thank you for tuning in and making time to be a part of our show. If you're listening to it at some future point via MP3 download or off of our iTunes site, thank you for finding our podcast, and we hope that you enjoy the interview that's coming up today. Our goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, to make better and more informed decisions. We do that by interviewing thought leaders and executives who have transferable knowledge and ideas. This radio show is an extension of our 16-year business practice where we build CEO peer groups for executives in Orange County, California. We do that in cooperation with Renaissance Executive Forums. Executive Forums is an international organization of 1,200 members committed to helping members take their business to the next level. Doug and I currently lead multiple CEO peer groups here in Orange County. Doug is a master certified coach, and that's a distinction achieved by less than 900 certified coaches in the world. There are quite a lot of coaches, and many of them very good, but very few have made the commitment and gone through the rigorous training as Doug has to really be at the top of his profession. For that reason, Doug is the past president of the International Coach Federation. Doug is our lead partner, and he manages our coaching practice within the Critical Mass for Business. Recently, my book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, has been called the definitive guide to the CEO peer group experience. It's available for sale if you're interested. One of the places that you can find it is Amazon.com, of course. Simply go to Amazon and type in Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, and up will come a picture of the book. Buy yourself a copy or two. If you'd like to learn more about the CEO peer group experience or our coaching practice, I would encourage you to check out our website, which is Critical Mass for Business, Critical Mass for F-O-R Business.com. All right, well, let's turn our attention to our first two guests. So in this segment, we're actually going to have two partners on the line. We have Kevin and Thomas from FlexCell Systems Incorporated. Gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Good afternoon, Rick.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for having us on your show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'd like to get started by asking each of you to briefly describe kind of your professional path to your current partnership at FlexCell Systems. And maybe, Kevin, it's best if you go first.
Sure, I'll go first. This is Kevin, and I'm an electrical engineer, and I had 15 years working for the Defense Department under the Secretary of the Navy on the East Coast. And in end of 2001, at about the 15-year mark, had a life-changing event happen and decided to come to California to leave the technology world behind and become an actor. And in that whole time that I was an engineer, I was a serial entrepreneur, and the entrepreneurian blood never left me. So although I came here to become an actor, I ended up starting a company, was up in Hollywood, and one of my business partners was associated with Thomas, and that's how I met Thomas, actually in the entertainment industry. And he found out I was an engineer. We started talking and working together because he was trying to help me with that business, and we started the business together and have been together and partners ever since.
Yes, and this is was a good meeting of the minds. This is Thomas Griego, and this is my fourth technical startup related to electrochemistry or electroplating. All of them successful. The most recent prior to this was MGM Technologies, which I partnered with Kevin to essentially fulfill a legacy business that had started back in 1994. With another company I'd founded, which was Get Systems. The tool that we produce has been successfully used in the surface mount electronic component industries and has become the benchmark tool for miniaturization of those components. Only complication is after Y2K, there was a very vast fall off of the overall capacity needs for the industry, and we went from building 40 tools or more a year to trickling down to a couple, two or three machines per year. And that's where I hooked up with Kevin to fulfill those, and in the process we decided that we would form a partnership where everything that we earned would be directed to what's next. And so it's been a very creative environment here in trying to determine where do we go from the surface mount industry into maybe a consumer product industry, or stay within our core. And essentially we've ended up staying within the core.
Okay, that's a logical lead in then to my second question for you both, which is, where are you today, and can you describe FlexCell Systems, the business model a little bit, as well as the technology that you're bringing to market?
Okay, well, FlexCell Systems is a C Corp here in California. The main purpose of founding a new company is the positioning in the semiconductor industry, which is the active device side of the equation compared to passive resistors and capacitors, where we can literally position our company for a very rapid scale-up without the legacy of our old tools operationally weighing us down, or even deviating from the best practices in that industry, trying to reinvent ourselves for another type of industry. The biggest purpose that we have right now is to prepare our tool, which is in the prototype stages, for trials for doing the through silicon via, which is a very revolutionary advancement in the semiconductor industry.
And what need do you both see in the market from your intimate knowledge of the space that tells you there is a need for the technology you're bringing to market?
Well, the industry has been driven by what's known as Moore's Law. And Kevin can...
yeah, this is Kevin. And, you know, Moore's Law is we have to double data capacity every 18 months. And it's been true up until recently. It's getting tested because the industry has shrunk, we've shrunk the components to near physical limits where you can't pass electricity through the silicon because the silicon is too small at this point. And so they're having to come up with a better, faster way to be able to shrink these chips down to successfully stay on Moore's Law.
And to do that, since we're at the physical limits of what can be fabricated on a piece of silicon, the industry, through the developments that have occurred in miniaturization of mobile electronics, cell phones and such, has been stacking memory. Samsung was the first to very successfully stack two or three chips of the same memory, thereby not only doubling but tripling the capacity in the same form factor. So in a typical electronic device, it's all about real estate, and the smaller the footprint of an individual component is and the more power or processing power or storage capacity it has, the higher the value is. And now with stacking of these chips, it opens the door to not just homogeneous stacking of multiple memory modules to create a higher density storage, but also the heterogeneous stacking of multiple processors, memory, a video card, taking the entire module and reducing it to the size of the chip, so you end up with a system in a chip as opposed to a specific specialized chip. That type of advancement greatly reduces the form factors so that you can either stuff more feature sets into a device or just have a much smaller device. And one of the biggest benefits that we've all gained is that because of the short circuits and the short distance for the electron flow to occur, the battery power now goes from a battery that can service a device for one day to one that can last a couple of weeks. and that's a huge value for mobile electronics.
So for those in the audience that are slightly technical or aren't as technical, maybe as the conversation has been, you guys are really developing and enabling technology to allow for the next, what sounds like to me, from my limited experience in this sector, for maybe what is the next round and what next wave of being able to put more capacity on a smaller, at least a smaller horizontal footprint by being
Correct.
Able to allow them to go vertical with their mounting rather than always on the surface of the environment. Is that a fair assessment?
That's pretty much the main goal of the industry. One of the side benefits, however, is that you also eliminate tin lead solder, which is a hazardous material, so that devices no longer have to be interconnected with solder. In fact, the copper vias that our tool can build allows you to literally fuse copper to copper in the right environment to where the connection between the two points has pure bulk copper. And again, we end up with both an environmental benefit and a very tangible performance increase.
Okay, so unlike you both who are engineers, I only play one here on the radio show occasionally. But my knowledge, again, of this sector, there is a great effort around the world in process for these type of components because of the hazardous nature of lead. So again, your enabling technology of bonding copper to copper has a larger kind of what I would say is a macroeconomic trend behind it, where governments and agencies and companies are really trying to remove the lead. And that's a challenge because while lead has bad properties, in this application, lead has a lot of good properties, which is why it was originally chosen as this, you know, ability to be an adhesive, if you will. Is that,
sure.
Do you agree with that?
True. And you know, that pretty much levels the playing field for us as well, because the advent of a lead-free component or lead-free system literally opens the door to all companies, large and small. And in fact, our whole emphasis of development would largely benefit a much bigger company in terms of the full realization of our business opportunity.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a learning moment. When outside influences from inside the industry cause a disruption, it does, to your point, Thomas, potentially level the playing field, which means it opens opportunity up for entrepreneurs to step in who have either an idea or a technology or a patent or a new innovation that allows the larger industry to move in the direction that they've been mandated to move, when maybe there isn't an obvious and single answer to the problem. And so that's quite exciting for both of you guys, and I'm sure, you know, it's exciting for the people that are involved in your company and the investors behind it as well. It's a great market opportunity to have in front of you potentially.
We're very excited.
Okay, so let's move on, and I'd like you to share with us, you know, of all the things both of you have learned in your professional careers, you know, is there a set of guiding principles or a single principle that you both have agreed on, or maybe you have them separately, that you're using to lead and grow FlexCell Systems Incorporated?
Yes. The overriding principle obviously has to do with our purpose and finding solutions to very significant problems in the industry. And I think this is universal to any technology or, you know, obviously even in the consumer markets, that there has to be a need. There has to be an unmet need that has been studied or is in the way of either progressing for a larger industry like the semiconductor industry, or is in the way of performance gains, or in some cases even dwindling resources. And the typical entrepreneur has a vision, and you know, that vision is solid in their mind. When I see a solution, I see it in 3D, living color in my head. Now, how do I make that tangible enough that first of all, the rest of the team that's supporting this industry, this business, has the ability to completely understand it and contribute to the betterment of that technology. And so my goal is always produce a fully functioning prototype of the device before you step out the door to look for additional funding, or you start to introduce the idea or the concepts to a customer base. And that's a difficult challenge in any startup. The conundrum is you don't have a lot of funding to build the prototype. How do you build the prototype in the absence of funding, and how do you, you know, get that to be validated enough that you can go out and entice investors to participate in your opportunity, and to entice customers that you're on the right path to a solution. And I think that's, you know, again, a universal guiding principle in our case, in that we never go out and talk about the solution without having the substance of producing either test results or having staged a significant program where we can validate portions of our prototype or portions of our solution. And I think some companies, you know, for example, a company that might develop software, they have a lower threshold of a validation to cross, and with a computer and some code, they can demonstrate that their algorithm might be the path to success. In our case, it's a hardware issue, and we really do have to find the funds to build this hardware. Kevin and I had the benefit of starting this company with the proceeds of a legacy company, and that gave us just enough money to build our first 200-millimeter prototype, but not enough to get a 300-millimeter prototype, and that's where the real creative financing and the real magic starts in terms of the entrepreneur's just will to make it happen.
You know, and in this funding environment, having that as a guiding principle, a fully functional prototype is really critical, just because of the scarcity of funds that many startups have seen in all sectors, just, you know, by virtue of the economics environment that we are operating under. Thank you for sharing that, Thomas. I appreciate it. You know, I'd like to ask you to reflect on a time in your recent past when you had an opportunity to now look back on it and go, you know, that experience fundamentally gave me a benefit, an opportunity to grow, or to realize that I needed to bring other people into my business decision-making process, and kind of describe it for us. And when we talked about it, you suggested that the experience that you wanted to talk about really kind of affected you, Thomas, on a molecular level, where the experience actually helped to alter your business DNA. So could you share that with our audience, please?
Sure. The molecular level essentially is the way that I've operated companies in the past. In all of the previous startups and successful companies that you know were operating in their 10th year, they all started with essentially funding that came from within, and we raised in a company called Surfec Technologies, we raised $6 million in venture funding, and a lot of that a lot of that funding was to support the growth of a company that was vertically integrated. And we made a major molecular or DNA change in starting out here in California, where we used Kevin's background in contracting with the military to break the chain of being vertically integrated, where we have to have our own machine shop, have to have our own fabrication facility, and got to the point where we can outsource. And so the overall emphasis here at FlexCell Systems is largely on the development curve. It's the design and the process development that drives the company. And everything else flows through Kevin's desk, just getting outsourced to vendors literally all over the country. And so the current situation, this current web resources that are available for everything from machining to programming and any type of discipline that goes into rendering our designs into hardware has literally changed our we're more adept. We can design faster. Sometimes we struggle because we can't just walk out on the floor and change a prototype's component, you know, midstream. But it makes us smarter and it gives us more discipline to get the documentation right before we go out to the vendor base. That also changes how we use our funds. And I believe now, having had a startup where we raised an initial large amount from the venture capital world, that we probably could have gotten by with a lot less funding back in that day. So that tells me now that with the same discipline, we can get by with a lot less funding. And in our current endeavor, we literally have probably a need that would be one-tenth of the need for a similar type company structure that I would have done just 5 years ago. And that's a major change in the way we think, and it truly is a DNA.
Well, that's powerful, too, because it's not always the case, but many times as a early-stage company gets moving, successive rounds of investment to keep the company going forward can eat at the ownership that the founders have invested in the company. And so needing less money, I don't know necessarily that's going to be an outcome, but a byproduct of that may be even a little better ownership structure at the end of it. So that's a powerful example of partnerships affecting the way people think. And, you know, I know in when you were explaining to me that this has, for you, Thomas, has been a real eye-opener. And for Kevin, it is really getting an opportunity for him to use the years of experience that he had at the DOD and et cetera in vendor management. So it's exciting to see that you guys are adopting this model, and hopefully the benefits will really help to accelerate the growth of the firm as time moves on. So thank you for sharing that with our audience. I'd like to ask you a question that many mid-marketing companies are looking at. Mid-market companies we define as companies in the space between a couple million dollars to as much as $500 million, although frankly here in Orange County I consider it more of $100 million. In that space, mid-market companies, many of them are competing against very large competitors, either entrenched competitors or competitors who are entering a market as they are at the same time but perceived to have obviously much more capital and ability to kind of get into that market. As when you guys were talking with me, you helped me to see that you were actually employing a couple of the successful strategies that I've seen mid-market companies be able to use against larger competitors. You know, innovation, being an innovative company, and then being able to be a dominant company in your defined niche were two areas that you helped me understand that you're, in your entrepreneurial past, you've been able to kind of exploit those strategies. Could you take a minute and share with our audience kind of the story around the time that you were able to use kind of successful mid-market growth strategies against larger companies?
Well, in terms of competing with larger companies and selling to larger companies, one of the advantages that we are quick to point out is that we never shy away from our smallness. And in the United States, a technical startup, technology startups have great respect in terms of the knowledge that from that humble beginnings come the great companies of the future. And along the way, you don't have to wait for somebody for the success full path to emerge and everybody recognizes you now as a brand name. Essentially, you can use that smallness right in your everyday dealings with these companies. For example, we sell a tool that sells for $250,000 to $500,000 in the industry. And because we're small, we've been successful at getting the kind of terms that we need so that we're not financing the big companies' operations. So we always get at least half of the money to start it, and we get the rest of the money before we even ship the tool. And the only reason that we do that is because we make sure that there's no mystery as to the size of our company and how we're, you know, focused on such a very narrow niche on in our technology that they can't get a better solution than ours, and they do need to participate by financing the needs that they have by prepaying everything that we build for them. Now, that also goes into the funding strategies and how you work with your investors. Okay? The investors know you're obviously starting a startup and you've come from a kitchen table somewhere. They, you know, embrace that. Let them know that, you know, you're very familiar with all of the bootstrapping and any austerity measures that ever might be needed to get your company to the finish point. And with that, you know, you gain a respect where they realize that you're very responsible, very prudent with their invested dollars, and that you have a great chance of succeeding. Technology-wise, we're able to think about solutions in ways that the more well-prepared or better resourced employees of large companies can't do, because they just cannot risk the job that they have on a crazy idea or a radical strategy. And as a small technical startup, they count on you for being able to take those chances. And, you know, being so close to the ground, they know that, you know, your failure is not going to create a massive crater where their crater would be, you know, a massive crater for either them personally as a family or their department or even their company. So that symbiotic relationship where the technical startups, the small companies, get great respect and are completely scrutinized from the very early stages creates an environment where your goals in terms of operating and growing and managing your company are not always cash flow centric. In the case of operating a business for operational earnings, you may, you know, obviously operate your company for a technology positioning, an intellectual property positioning, or a market specialty positioning that then becomes a very sought-after position from a much larger company, and then an acquisition occurs, and that's a very successful outcome for any startup to be in.
Well, that was a thoughtful discussion, and clearly technology companies and the industry has its own dynamics, but I would suggest to those in our audience who are not in technology that these opportunities exist in other markets and industries as well. And Doug and I believe there is a lot of shared learning that can happen, and sometimes some of the best breakthrough ideas come from outside your industry. And so I appreciate you, Thomas, sharing your experience in that area. You know, gentlemen, I have a number of other questions that I really was dying to ask you this afternoon, but unfortunately, I'm not going to have the time today to do that. So, Kevin Mello and Thomas Griego, would you be willing to join me again on a future installment of Critical Mass, the radio shows, and allow me to ask you these other questions that I wanted to talk to you about today?
Certainly, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to get back in touch with them, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to find another time in the not-too-distant future, because there's a lot of other exciting things going on with these gentlemen. We didn't even get a chance to talk about their presentation to the Tech Coast Angels and the other things that they're doing, so we're going to have them back, and I guarantee it, it's going to be as soon as their schedule will allow it, hopefully in October from my perspective. But if someone wanted to learn more about you guys and your firm as a parting shot, where would they go on the online to find your company, and how would they find you?
Well, we're on the World Wide Web. We are flexcellsystems.com. And that would be spelled FlexCellSystems.com.
Alrighty, gentlemen. I will be back in touch with you shortly to find another date that works your calendar so that I can have you back and we can finish this interview. I do appreciate the time today and the fact that you're a friend of the Critical Mass Radio Show, and welcome members of newest members to the community for Critical Mass here in Orange County. Thank you for your time.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
Bye. Doug and I believe that business owners and executives learn best from the experiences of their peers, and I would suggest, ladies and gentlemen, that inside that interview and some of the answers, there's gold in their answers, and I would strongly, not lead, gold, give you the opportunity to spend some time and revisit that when we put it up as an MP3 in the archives. I'd like to turn my attention now to a successful entrepreneur, another successful entrepreneur here in Orange County. It's great. With great pleasure that I welcome Erica Thomas to the Critical Mass Radio Show this afternoon. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's get right into the interview, and I apologize for being a few minutes late. I think we can accommodate that and move forward with your interview. Tell us about and tell the audience about your latest venture, which is named Harper's in Corona Del Mar.
It is actually a women's clothing boutique. We sell a variety of things from apparel, jewelry, accessories, handbags, you name it. It's a women's boutique, and we even dabble a little bit in children's. And we're right on Pacific Coast Highway, and we are a price point boutique. Everything in the store really retails $100 and under, and we are really doing well. We've been open almost a year now.
Okay, so you're not a Johnny-come-lately, not that that's a bad thing, and maybe not even a good way to say it, but I know you have a deep and rich history in Corona Del Mar and in the industry that you're in, the retail industry. So back us up a little bit, Erica, and tell us what you were doing that predates when you opened Harper's.
Absolutely. I actually have been in the industry for about 15 years, and before this, opened a boutique called Erica D, and that was back in 2001, and it was in Corona Del Mar. I opened it when the economy was really good, and we were an instant success. We were right on Pacific Coast Highway, and we were really all women's, but more of a contemporary price point, meaning $150 to $1,000 price point, and we were doing absolutely amazing. We expanded that business within a five-year period, and we expanded to a much larger location on PCH. We expanded to a kids' store, men's store, and a larger women's store. And we were in business for about 9 years, and then the economy decided to take a crash, and so we closed those stores because our price point was a little bit too high for what the economy was working with. So I shut the doors and decided I was going to take a break from retail. And then many of my loyal fans and customers, which I had generated over a 10,000 client base, I live in the area. I kept running into them, and they all just said, gosh, we just miss your stores so much. There's nowhere to shop like that. So I did a lot of market research and decided, all right, I'm going to do this again. I can do retail in my sleep. I know how to do it well, but let's do it differently this go around. And I was looking at, you know, many of the retail stores that were doing well, and it was really the lower price point stores like H&M, Forever 21. And so I decided to take what I had done with Erica D, which was create a high-end shopping experience and customer service level and beautiful fixtures and an amazing retail environment, and then put price point and value into this new boutique. And that's how Harper's came to be. So I opened that about a year after closing Erica D, and we have been really successful since we've opened, as we had a really loyal following to start with, and then people just went crazy when they realized, wow, I can still shop, you know, the fabulous store, get great styles, but it's affordable, and I don't have to break the bank to shop there.
Oh, that is That's an interesting story, and I appreciate your willingness to share that as openly you did with our listeners here on Critical Mass, the radio show, Erica, because I'm sure there were times as you were winding down your other stores that you didn't realize this was on the other side of it. But again, it's a learning moment for all entrepreneurs and business owners out there. You never really know what's around the next bend, and you just have to keep persevering.
Absolutely.
Great. I'd like to ask you if you would share with our audience your guiding principle for growing and leading Harpers today.
You know, I've really, you know, I to think about that, you know, I really would have to say, you know, anything that is legal, moral, and ethical to make the store what it is, that's really what my guiding principle is. You know, I definitely stay within those boundaries, as that's how I have always run my companies. And, you know, obviously at the end of the day, we want to be profitable and we want to grow the business and we want to get to where we want to get to. But I'd like to say that I'd like to stay within those guidelines, as that's how I'd like to run my business and how I have run my businesses.
Well, I really appreciate that. That is succinct, but very deep and thoughtful. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I appreciate you reflecting on that answer and talking about it today on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Doug and I, this is a commercial for Critical Mass. Sorry, but, you know, we're working feverishly on our next book in the Critical Mass series, and it's going to be the Critical Mass Guiding Principles, which will be excerpts from this radio show, ladies and gentlemen, turned into a book of our guest guiding principles. And Erica, I'm probably going to come back to you, get a little bit more content for that, but I'd like to get your response into our next book that'll be out later this year.
Great.
Okay. Let's turn our attention to a question that I'd ask our earlier guest. We try to ask each guest this, which is, you know, looking back on your experiences, was there a time when you can share with the audience sort of an experience that now, with the benefit of having some distance between you and that decision, you realize that the way that you came about making the decision could have been better if you would have had something else in your life or around you as business partners or as a, you know, business associates? And could you share that experience with our audience?
Absolutely. You know, looking back on my experience having Erica D., you know, I was running that business, and it was a multi-million-dollar company, and, you know, you just get so focused on this is how my business is, and this is what I'm doing, and this is how I know how to make money and profits. And, you know, one of the things that I feel that I lacked at that time was a peer group and guidance from outside sources. And I think that if I would have had that type of environment, you know, once a week, once a month, it probably would have helped me as a business owner maybe make less mistakes and maybe foreseen some of the economy, you know, issues. You know, maybe we could have brought lower price point into Erica D. Maybe we could have, you know, saved that business per se, or, you know, possibly just seen that trend coming a little bit, you know, earlier on. By having some outside guidance from peer groups or some type of, you know, business advisor on the outside, because at that point in my career, I really, you know, did not have that. So that's one thing that, you know, reflecting back, definitely I could see would have benefited my past business.
And I'm sure there are others out in the audience who connect with that experience, because as the pressure grows on you, the sole final decision maker, that was your business. You ran that multi-million-dollar business as the founder and the owner. It gets harder and harder under stress to see options. You want to, but your field of focus just narrows. It's kind of, you get that survival instinct. And I think that's very insightful that you shared that experience with us. I can only imagine the pressure you must have been under as you had to make the decisions that you had to make as it related to the stores that you had under Erica D.
Exactly. Yep. Absolutely. It was very, very difficult.
Well, I'm excited about the fact that you took, how do I say this? you took valuable lessons away from that experience and you've implemented them in a business model for Harper's, and that you had such a strong, loyal following that gave you the impetus, if you will, and funding, if you will, to some degree, to get back into the market and be a player again in a retail space. I know you're continuing, though, the business to face challenges. All businesses are. Would you share briefly with us kind of what a current challenge that you're facing with Harper's and how you're addressing it?
Yes. You know, one of the challenges is you know, I, being a local business owner, and, you know, had local businesses for years, I got branded under Erica D as a high-end shopping, you know, boutique. And so to take my branding as an individual and open Harper's, I actually realized that it was very difficult to actually be branded as a high-end boutique and then open a price point boutique. So that was one of my current challenges. Is being branded that, as a high-end boutique.
A brand is a valuable thing.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm sorry, did I talk to...
So, you know, one of the things is that, you know, we have to really put it out there to our market that we actually are a price point boutique and get them in the door to experience the lower price point and be like, gosh, Harper's is a great price point. You can still afford to shop here. It isn't as high-end as Erica D was. So... that's one of my current challenges that we're facing.
Well, you know, I know that you are using Facebook to communicate with your fans, who
yes.
are also your clients. And I have to believe that you're getting... Could you share with our audience what's happening is with your use of Facebook?
Yes, absolutely. That's something that I was, you know, we really didn't use with my past businesses. It wasn't as a big thing back then. Social media... it was just becoming big as I closed the doors. And so with Harper's, we've been able to really jump on that bandwagon. And when we get new product in or we want to market something with the boutique, we just go ahead and post it on our fan page. And within 30 minutes to an hour, the store is packed with people. When we get new product in or we have an event, all we have to do is blast it on our fan page, and we're getting, you know, huge success levels with that, which is great because it's cost us nothing, and we're getting, you know, a great return on it versus, you know, before when I was having to pay thousands of dollars for ads in magazines and types of advertising. So this has been great for us, which has been a really different thing considering we didn't use it a couple years ago.
Well, that is one of the most relevant and easy to understand examples of the power of social media that I think we've had here on the 2 years of Critical Radio Show. And Erica, I'm going to tell you that's going to be one that I will retell that story, because I think when people are trying to learn the value of social media, your experience and how you're using it is a great indication of how the power that it does have. The immediacy and the price point make it such a compelling tool that, you know, I really encourage other entrepreneurs and business owners to consider social media.
Exactly. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
Okay, so you are building Harper's back into a larger business, because I know we're going to talk in a minute about growth strategies that you have for this business model. But before we get there, you know, even when you were doing several million dollars a year, you fit very comfortably in the definition of a mid-market firm in your industry. Can you share with us maybe the way that you were able to compete against the larger companies, firms in your space with mid-market strategies, either being dominant in your niche or maybe nimble or certainly innovative in the way that you're doing things, or also being memorable and someone who, you know, is a firm that people remember and talk about?
Yes, I would say that we were very memorable. We gave a special shopping experience, And with that, you know, people remember that. You know, you can go, you could go shop at Neiman Marcus, Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom. You can really get merchandise, women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, anywhere these days. And so that's what we had to do. We had to classify the experience and make that a memorable experience as special and unique so that people would come back and say, well, you know, it's a unique place to shop, and it's somewhere that I want to go again, and I want to bring my friends, and I want to bring my family. And I really believe that that's how the business got built, as big as it did, because people had an amazing experience, and it was memorable, and it became household name for many to shop at Erica D. And again, that's what we're doing with Harper's. You know, we're giving this, you know, experience from the minute they walk through the door with music, environment, great salespeople, offering a glass of water, thank you notes after someone makes a purchase that they get in the mail. Very VIP service, which you don't get at a lot of stores these days. It's really not the common thing, you know, when you walk into a store to get excellent, excellent customer service on every level. A lot of these stores have forgotten that that's so important for, you know, the experience of a customer.
You know, it's like meant to be. Your answer, I was just reading earlier today one of the books on mid-market company growth strategies, and I recall the paragraph, and I'm paraphrasing, but it said, many times the product or the service that you're selling may in fact not be terribly different than your competitors, especially if you're in a distribution business or a retail business. But what they said was, if your employees are different, either through training or the experience that you give to your client, that can be your point of differentiation and how to be memorable. And you just talked about that today. That it's like textbook here.
Right. It works. It works. I promise. It does.
So tell us now, you're a successful business owner, you're an entrepreneur again, relaunching a new business. What is the growth opportunity for you with this business model, and what's the impact if you're able to successfully leverage it?
The growth model is we'd like to open multiple Harpers, and we're being very conservative about it, as you know, the economy, we don't know really where it's going. Some people say it's getting better. Some people say it's not. So we're just, you know, really trying to get this first store, you know, very just working on its own and profitable and just, you know, working very, very easy. And after that, we'd like to just research in the market where else a store like this would fit. And do that with a couple more of these. I feel it's very possible to do it because, again, we're a lower price point. We've created this special, unique shopping environment. So it isn't like you're going to a Nordstrom or a Forever 21 or one of those stores. You're actually getting all of that value and price point in a high-end shopping feel of a boutique. So I feel that there is that market, and it's open for more Harpers out there, and that's what our growth model is. We're hoping to do that within the next 5 years.
Ah, I hear the enthusiasm in your voice, and it's rewarding to hear that. And I have every bit of confidence that there will be more Harpers in the future. And we're going to continue to have you back on the radio show as this evolution happens, to share with the audience the things that you're learning and you're doing, if you're willing to come back on a future installment of Critical Mass.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Is there anything else about you, Erica Thomas, or Harpers, your business, that I haven't thought about to ask you today that you would like to say to the audience?
I think we've covered it. This has been really great to talk about the business and my experience, and I'm glad to have been able to share it.
Well, I appreciate the fact that in what is a very busy time for you on many fronts, that you can carve out the time to both be here today with us on the show, but also do the pre-work to get ready to give thoughtful answers as you did. If someone would like to learn more about your Harpers, your business, you, where would they go to do that?
They can go to our website, www.shopharpers.com. www.thebusinessofmarketing.com, and they can check us out there, or they can go on to Harper's onto Facebook and become a fan and follow us daily on that, and or they can just come straight to the store at 2610 East Coast Highway in Corona Del Mar.
Oh, that's a it's a beautiful location, and I've had the privilege of being able to come down to your store a couple times to first meet you and then talk with you about being on the show, and I would strongly encourage that in our listening audience. Take a trip. It's a beautiful part of the of Orange County, and the shop is wonderful from my perspective as a man sitting in your shop. So that is great. Hey, I just want to thank you for being a friend to the radio show and really welcome you to the Critical Mass business community. It's great to have you as one of the members of our business community.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, that's Erica Thomas, and her shop is a boutique shop, Harper's, in Corona Del Mar. If you have the time, check it out. I highly would recommend it. Exciting hour today together. Very different industries and businesses. The guests are very different markets, but the learning opportunities were equally abundant in both sets of interviews, and I hope that you, our listening audience, were able to take away some thoughts and ideas that you can apply to your business, and that will help you to make better, more informed decisions. You know, that's going to do it for us this week, but don't worry, we will be back in October with even more interesting and exciting shows. Until then, this is Rick Franzi of Critical Mass for Business, wishing you all that all your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on octalkradio.net. Stay tuned for the SLMA Radio Hour coming up next.